Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thank you for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals, offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is retirement, identity, purpose, connection, and staying relevant. Growing older in a way that feels meaningful is not easy. I should know because I am in that phase. Not that I'm retiring, but many of my age group are. If you're facing this challenge, no matter who you are and where you live, I trust this conversation will bring you new perspectives and leave you feeling encouraged. The professional I'm introducing today is Lizanda Jung, industrial and organizational psychologist in private practice from Pretoria. Welcome, Lizanne.
Good morning, everyone.
Lizanne, before we give our full attention to how to age meaningfully, could you tell us about the work you do?
Yes, by all means. I work mostly in organizations. I work on an individual, team, and organizational level. So very involved in strategic thinking, strategic workshops, rolling that down to the operational levels. I work with professionals mostly at this stage of my career, also reinventing myself for retirement, but not far from that at this stage. And as a coaching psychologist, I work with various things like career transitioning that we're talking about today, business coaching, leadership coaching, team effectiveness coaching. And then I also work structurally with leadership development. That's really something I really enjoy. And then, of course, I do coaching for people that want to integrate their personal lives with their work lives. Quite a busy practice. I'm also an organizational culture expert. I work with international companies mostly and very involved in establishing or evaluating new cultures in organizations. That's, of course, underpinned by values, and that's something I will touch on today on an individual basis. That's more or less what I do. The older you get, the more busier you get, and it makes it very hard to think of giving up all of this, which I really enjoy.
Yes. In our society, retirement often signals the end of one's career. I was thinking, if you could provide some background for our interview, you could perhaps outline the different stages of a career.
Yes. So normally we go through different stages in our career, and it goes with lifestyle changes as well, or lifestyle phases of what we are facing. So the first one is career exploration. Round about, I see that now up to the age of about 30, where I'm trying to find out what I want to do. I'm not going to go into the details of that. And then from about 30 to 40, 45, we go into establishment, where I build my professional expertise, and then I go to career maintenance. And that's from the ages from about 45 to where decline sets in, to the ages of 60 to 65. And that's when my professional identity becomes sort of embedded in who I am, what I do, and who I show myself to the social world. But then the disengagement or approaching retirement comes, and there's a slight or gradual reduction in the involvement in work roles, and I need to prepare psychologically for this will end, especially if you work in an organization where there's a definite limit of you have to retire at 65. So that is definitely where the challenges set in, because a lot of people talk about retirement basically from a financial readiness point of view. In South Africa, unfortunately, about 6% of read it recently, what the Old Mutual said, can properly retire with financial comfort. So that's a very worrying thing. And that's something that drives a lot of continuous work. But I want to reframe it that it's not about that. It's about a lot of other factors that you are so embedded in your professional identity or in your work identity that you never think about, so what happens then? And that's when it's more than just a financial event. It's definitely when you prepare for retirement, it is a psychological event, a social connection event. It's relationships that changes. It's your health relationship and your growth and engagement that you need to consider. I see a lot of people that now become anxious. I've got a client that I saw him yesterday, and he's got this number of 24 on his whiteboard. And I said, what is that? And he said, oh, that's how many payslips I've got left. So, and I hear the conversations. Yes. So a lot of people count up the times because they're not really engaged anymore. There might be some form of disengagement. And a definite, the financial event is one thing, but the irony is that you start planning for that long before you actually have to retire. In corporate worlds, there's normally a retirement policy, so that's some sort of buffering. But with the context of what we live in, that is barely enough to sustain us if we live for another 25 years or 30 years. The problem is when in the first world, you can now easily work till 70 and you're quite still employable. And the shift for that in the South African context is basically because we have scarce skills, and we've also got triple BEE that impacts that we need to give the younger generation an opportunity to step into those roles. So our retirement age is anything from 60, 62 to 65 max. And that, of course, makes you realize that if you look at how your life expectancy has gone up, when we grew up, you know, parents would die late in their 60s. If they make 70, it was an achievement. Now we have people that turn 100 or easily turns 80. So if you retire, you've got another 25 years or 30 years that you need to provide for financially. So retirement is paradoxical. It's the end of a career, but it's also the fear of how long am I going to live? And that means that in the South African context, especially with rising cost services that's not available, very expensive health services, that brings a very new dimension or a very different dimension than what we would have in the first world, where those things are taken care of, especially in the countries like the UK, Australia. There's a lot of different focus because there are no financial worries or very little. So basically what happens is that there are some serious financial challenges, and I'm not going to talk about that because I'm not a financial expert that can advise you on that, but it's something that you do need to consider before you have to go on active retirement. And I want to, first of all, I want to redefine retirement as a recharging or a retirement, a different meaning to that, a new phase. I think our mental models around retirement, whether it's personal, the community that sees you as old, some people don't like that, but you need to change your mental model and your preparation for retirement. So that's the context of what I'm going to talk about. But the career decline or disengagement when we approach a retirement from a career stage is very, very difficult, and especially changes the closer you get to that. And then I see the anxiety setting. Where I do a lot of retirement counseling is in organizations where people are referred to me to say, you know what, this person is now 71 and he's still working, but he needs to realize that it's coming to an end. And that's very traumatic because they are very good at what they do. They've got years of experience, wisdom, skills, and suddenly you're not needed. And it's normally the people that struggle the most are the men. Women are better with that. So the six core domains in the psychology of retirement is your identity that changes. And it can be quite exciting to fulfill a new chapter of your life. It's the beginning of a new stage of identity, purpose, and contribution. It's not the end of you. It's the end of a working cycle. So first of all, reframing into how do I go into the next phase without clinging to how I have been defined?
That is an enormous question. Would you like to talk about the other five core domains at a later stage?
Let me go into that, because I'll tell you what the sort of psychological preparing of retirement brings, the emotional and practical challenges.
Okay.
The first one is your emotional adjustment. Now, you lose your identity through that, so you are not the engineer anymore. Who are you? That's the main question. So people may experience the emotional adjustment as things like a loss of structure. I'm used to getting up at 5, go to work, sit in front of my laptop all day. I've got interactions. I've got relevance in a certain context. And now there's that loss of structure. There's the feelings of irrelevant. Who am I now? And uncertainty about the future. And for decades, people would normally men, especially men, and I just want to make a distinction here. I find that when men get together, the first question they ask on a social interaction intervention, they ask, so what do you do? And it's a very difficult question. And I'll jump a bit to men there, because men gets defined by what they do and what their role is in society. So they normally traditionally have been providers. When we get together as women, we ask, do you have children? Have you got grandchildren yet? What do you, you know, what are your interests? And that obviously brings a hell of a lot of anxiety for men, because that what do you do, it disappears. So there's an immense loss of the identity, because men tend to build their ego and their identity strength on my job. And that's the first opening question. With women, it's slightly different. Then there's the financial anxiety that sets in, and that's the longevity of my savings, my healthcare costs, the economic uncertainty. How am I going to live? Where am I going to live? Should I still live in this big house? There are numerous questions that you have to ask, but especially, will my money grow? A lot of people have not made adequate provision for pensions, and that is problematic for pension continuation, or never had somebody giving them advice on what would be the best things to do. Then there are serious health concerns. I often find people close to retirement that says, you know what, I can feel it now. I'm not 50 anymore. I cannot do what I did 5 or 10 years ago. It's strenuous. The stress gets to them. So there's possible health decline, especially if it's in a high stressful job, that I deal a lot with, high anxiety about, I don't know if I should retire, you know. I haven't made plans. And there's a lot of health concerns. And those concerns, what happens in the brain, affects the body. And that could lead to a lot of things that I need to take care of before I can actually decide, okay, my health then suddenly becomes in the forefront. But it's always, or most of the times, it's influenced highly by anxiety, the stress hormones, and there's a whole biological component that I work through. And then physical limitations. People get hip replacement, knee replacement. When they go on mining sites, for example, they don't pass the health assessment, so they can't work on site anymore. So there are physical limitations. And yes, it's part of aging, I suppose. But then the other big one is the loss of social contact. Because when you go to work, you have a community of people, and it's built in relationships, because you have to communicate with them. It's people that you've been working with for many, many years. But that's exactly what it is. If people leave, I always say that when somebody leaves the organization, there's a sense of loss, because there's a sense of loss of the friendships and things like that. But you know what? A month later, they'll advertise for somebody else, and you've sort of forgotten as far as the organization is concerned, and life goes on, and people are not in your space anymore. So that's a huge loss. And that's where perhaps one of the most important one is to really, when you retire, to look at your social network that shrinks dramatically after retirement. So I'll talk about how we can counteract that later on. As I said, for men, the status and social connection, a big thing, loss of identity, feeling of uselessness, social isolation, and it feels like a loss of relevance. For women, they transition slightly different, because they, throughout their life, they would have a career, but they're also the caregiver, the parent, the family organizer, emotional cushion in families and in the extended family. And they're also used to change, physical changes through their lifetime. Men are not so much challenged by that, although lately there's a lot of focus on testosterone depletion that men find, and they lose their fighting spirit. So I always say, when it comes to health, check your markers, okay, because that can make a huge difference in a man's life. With women, we may face greater financial vulnerability if you are a single parent. And with women entering the workforce, sort of like especially Generation X, we call it the key children, the house key children. Mm-hmm. That's when mom started working, had a full career, and they faced the same challenges. But they seem to transition much easier into the next phase of life through the grandchildren, through the church, through other communities, and they adjust to that far better. But if you have been working all your life, you experience the same fear, and perhaps more if there's no support from the partner that you had, like through divorce, or that you lost your partner through death, and the financial strain and stress can actually be higher there than with men. But that's something that is quite contextual in South Africa. Also, I see that in the Black cultures, that when you work and you are responsible for paying back tax, that's to support the people in your family, if you don't know what the term means, the need is to look after your parents. So in the mid-career, when you're building your career, you have all these added responsibilities. And you never make ample provision for your own retirement, unless if you're in an organization. But they have the extended families that they need to take care of, the next generation. Very often when children are well-educated, which you see more and more today, they don't want to support their parents. If the parents both work, and they are financially independent, it's a great relief. So there are cultural influences in the South African context that can make the financial strain quite harder, dealing with the expectations earlier on of retiring parents. So we must also take that into consideration when you look at the full human being in front of you and their cultural impact or demands or things like that when you do the planning. So it's a shift in mental models, like I said. Instead of asking, what is the job that I have? What is what I'm doing currently? You need to change the question to, what kind of life do I want to live now? And that's a difficult one, especially if you've been tremendously busy all your life. And you have to start with your personal values. Now, an interesting exercise that I do, I always ask people and say, tell me what you want them to say on your funeral. Because people don't say bad things about you, like you were stingy or things like that. They don't say that. But it's how you want to be remembered. So I let them write the eulogy. And then I extract the values. And I say, okay, so what of these values have you really lived out before you come now to this stage where you have to retire? The most interesting thing, I also want to make a distinction here with men and women. I often ask, what are your hobbies? And, you know, explore what are the things that excite you? What gets you out of bed? How would you like to be remembered, and extract the values from them? Now, the interesting thing that I hear time and time again in retirement counseling, when I ask the questions, you know, what sort of hobbies have you got and what do you regret not doing? Sometimes people will say, I love woodwork, but I never had enough time for that. And we explore those options. But in most cases, the men say, I regret working so hard and had no time for my family. My kids grew up. I was absent. I didn't go through all the stages with them. And that for me is a good connection point to say, let's start with that. Not living in regret, but repurposing what you feel you have lost. So there are different approaches to get to that. So the values are very important in terms of what kind of life do you want to live. Now, there's also different phases in that. When we go into retirement, the first phase is normally the pre-retirement anticipation. If people have been burnt out, they are tired of getting up, tired of sitting in the traffic, tired of just the fact that they're not feeling so needed. That's more underlying issues that I will unpack when I do engage with people. But they get excited and say, I'm so glad to get away from this. I can't wait for retirement. There might be definitely anxiety about financial security, and they start looking at their finances. I always say it's never too late to reevaluate whether the pool of money that you have available, is it enough? Because that obviously is an important driver in what you're going to do, if you're going to take up part-time work or mentoring where you'd still get paid. And then very strongly about their questions about identity and purpose. And the important questions there in the first phase is, what am I without my job title? Who are you? And I find that people do very little introspection into describing themselves. And we focus on strengths and weaknesses. And now sometimes I get feedback from other people to help them define something they just don't question. But preparing mentally for that is, how will I structure my time? So you've got about 5 to 10 years before you retire. And who am I without my job title? And then after retirement, there is very often a honeymoon phase. There's relief, there's suddenly all this freedom, and there's the novelty of not waking up. A very dear friend of mine has retired lately. She lost her husband very young, and she said, Lizzie, all I do is, I'm so grateful for not waking up to an alarm in the morning. She says, and then I started walking, but now I'm stuck. So we had a long discussion, and she enjoyed selling houses before she moved into her husband's business. Financial freedom she definitely has, but she's also now a widow, and that brings other challenges, quite traumatic challenges. But she said to me, the moment she retires, she's going to travel now and do all of this. And when the retirement stuck, now suddenly there's the honeymoon phase is a bit over, and we had a long discussion to say, why don't you go back to your love? And that was selling houses. And she says that's perfect, because she's also worked all her life. She doesn't have a money problem, but there's no meaning in a day. So you can go and walk and power walk with a group of acquaintances. She's fairly involved in the church activities. But apart from that, what now? So the honeymoon phase is where people go and travel. They start eagerly pursuing their hobbies and spending time with their family. And what is important is that it's very nice. It's like I often say to people, why don't you just take a sabbatical? For 6 months, do nothing. Do what your heart desires. But during that time, these are the things you need to reflect on. Because when the 6 months is over, the honeymoon phase is over. You know, all this excitement. I mean, some of the guys that I counseled, they would say to me, so I said, what are you going to do? You can't wait now. This is your date. You've got 24 slips, payment slips left. And then one guy said, I'm going to camp for a year. I said, and when the year's over, what are you going to do? And I can see, like, okay, this is a blank space. He said, I don't know. I said, so you can camp for a year, but what happens with your house? What happens? Who's going to look after that? Is your wife in on this picture? No, not really. She wants to go and visit the kids immediately. There's a pull into different directions. Because one of the things that in the honeymoon phase, it might be very nice to have your husband at home now. But let me tell you, if you both worked and you now have to spend 24/7 in each other's company, it will not work for me. Because one of my values is that I want to be independent, go and visit my kids overseas alone. I go and travel with a friend. I work away a lot. So for me, that independence, I really want to guard it as much as I can. But suddenly being 24/7 with two highly ambitious people, and we need to decide on what I want to do. I'm not so sure that that's an easy conversation for most people. Mm-hmm. But the honeymoon phase obviously gets the disenchantment sets in very quickly, because individuals start feeling bored. They don't have a purpose or a loss of purpose of working. Loneliness sets in, especially when you're single, and a lack of structure. So there the rebuilding starts. And it's typically like going through any loss. You're sort of in denial, you enjoy it, you're going to travel, but you have to make a budget 5 to 10 years before to review your budget and say, listen, we can travel once a year. Because you are going to cut on your expenses. That's the reality. You cannot do the things that you think it's fun. And you can go camping for a year if you're both into that. I've got a very successful retirement of two people that retired financially quite astute. They kept their house, they took their camper, and for 3 years they traveled the whole of South Africa and parts of the Southern African region. And after 3 years, seeing all the places, they said, okay, so the house was taken care of, they didn't have any debt, and that was sort of like still passive income coming in. But after 3 years, decided, okay, we know where we want to live, and they settled there. Very happy retirement. So now they're into their fifth year. They've got a lot of meaning. They do still travel, but not as much as that 3 years of just exploring. What actually, she was 5 years older than her husband at the time. And the fear of, will we grow old together, made them decide that let's do this and just have fun for 3 years. And so you can do that, but it will definitely not work for me. I also don't think for my husband. So now we're at a crossroads. So what do we do with that lack of structure? And rebuilding meaning and identity, who do we become? The fourth phase of retirement is normally where I create a new life structure. So the honeymoon phase is over, the reality is set in, and now that, especially the third phase, leads to a lot of things of boredom, you know, the boredom, watch TV all day, don't want to do anything else. We call it an escape, a loss of purpose. I don't have to get up, neglect, personal care, depressive symptoms, my sleeping patterns, all sorts of things can show in that phase. But if I create a new life structure, and that's where change has now been accepted, and I'm re-energizing into something new, they might develop new routines, and they say, okay, let's do this together. We're going to walk in the morning. They have their own charities. Some people get involved in communities where they live, start doing the gardening because they love that. Some people might start breeding plants or whatever. You might start mentoring others if that's one of your values to pay back. Then that is a wonderful thing to do. Pursue new learning, get involved in volunteer work, go and sit with little children. That really energizes you in places where there are no parents or things like that. I think what's very important here, and there's two things that came to me while I was talking now. The one is that I think if you retire, be very careful, and this is the frustration I see in retirees, be very careful that you become the caretaker of your grandchildren. You need to be very clear on your role, because I see very old people looking after very little children. And it's abusive from your children's side because they don't want to pay the expensive cost. And then you become the cook and the bottle washer and the children one. That phase of your life is over. Don't become that, because it causes family strife, disenchantment from the older people's side. Don't do that if you can. But you can mentor or go and take your time and spend it with little children who do not have parents. It's in lifting, and you open a big new world. When you spend time with your grandchildren, I say that in my life, I like to be the grandmother that teaches them new things. We paint, we do pottery. I tell them about nebulas and stargazing and stuff like that. And we play in the garden for the first time. We can really play, because as two oldest children, we never had that opportunity. So see the world through their eyes, and it's fascinating and it's fun. But I'm not going to be the caretaker. I've done that part of my life. So be careful that your new life structure is not built around looking after grandchildren. It's draining. Phase five is when stability comes. So if you do the reorientation phase well, the stability then settles in, where you have a new sense of identity, like balanced routines, meaningful activity, and psychological well-being. And then you start enjoying it. And when people go through that phases, people would say it was very fearful in the beginning. I also, in my group of friends that has retired, I see that they would say to you, it was horrific in the beginning because all the fears were there, and finding your passion, finding new hobbies. But now, 5 to 10 years into retirement, They absolutely love it. They say it's actually the best thing that could have happened. But I want you to understand that it's a process, and not a process that's going to happen organically necessarily. It needs to be something that you do with a purpose. Okay, to say that I need to look at where am I going to from here? And I need to look at all areas of my life. So that is basically the journey you undertake. I'll talk at the end. I'll talk about how you can assess that by using something that I call the retirement wheel. And that's very important to look at. Where are you now? Where are you stuck? And what gives me a sense of direction to work with this in a very structured way?
Thank you, Lizanne. Yes, I think you have managed to explain how complicated retirement is. Because truly, as you said, in the South African context, finances especially are a very great challenge. But you have also shown that finances can be in place, but there can be other problems, like feeling isolated. So we've talked about so many things, and thank you for unpacking the phases of retirement. What would you like to touch on next?
I think what's interesting is I find there's four personalities, I call them retirement personalities, and they all have challenges and strong areas. So the first one is the continuous. I have a lot of them that I work with. And that's also a South African context that impacts on that. As I said, I work a lot with engineers, very scarce skill worldwide. They are, in some areas, worldwide technical experts in their field of expertise. So it's very difficult to replace that. And what makes it more difficult in the South African context, when people are establishing careers after expiration and they start establishing before they actually maintain that status, that's when they start really building their technical expertise. But by the time they retire, they are deeply, deeply embedded in their technical expertise. And as I said, not only in the South African context. Now, the problem that comes there is that you have the young generation, they start a family with the South African context, especially in an international company. They easily transfer, especially in this case, to Australia or to Canada or to the UK. So when they are fearful of the future of their children in that life phase, we lose very good talent in South Africa. So what we often rely on in highly professionalized environments, and that's medicine, all the professions that I'm talking about, is that we can't just let go of them because the client requires somebody with 25 or 30 years deep technical experience. They've built a very good a name for themselves. They are called in by name. So what you see there is they normally in the professional fields and they carry on consulting. They do in the company formally retire, but then we keep them on as independent consultants and then they can choose how many hours they work. But I find that they are extremely busy. So consulting, part-time work, mentoring, lecturing, and advisory roles in certain areas. They enjoy maintaining their expertise. They're not ready to let it go. I sometimes think it's an ego thing as well, but that's just my view. They contribute knowledge. Not all of them are natural mentors. So sometimes I have to work with them to say, now you're going to do a workshop for me because you don't have the time to mentor. And that's basically driven by the scarce skills that we retain in South Africa. And it's a massive problem in South Africa. But they stay intellectually engaged. That level of experience, we also use them in engineering to review the submissions for professional registration. So I work closely with that on the psychological side. In the coaching side, I'm like the mother that says, how far are you with your competencies, you know, and also the fear of failure. A lot of professional people struggle from imposter syndrome, especially when they're younger. So they are very valuable in mentoring and reviewing the submissions of younger engineers, for example. Also, in the professional field, we normally have supervision. So they can also do work in the medical field to be a supervisor for the academic practices. But there's something fascinating that I'll talk about the health stuff just now, about how that is often just too narrowly focused, and then the plans don't work out, and then there's no purpose. So they enjoy that, and it gives them a sense of purpose that remains quite strong. Then you have the adventurers, like the guy who's going to camp now for a year. My biggest nightmare. The adventurers see retirement as an opportunity for more exploration and reinvention. They start traveling. If they have a lot of money, of course, that's easy. You can go and do boat trips and do whatever you want. A lot of them start new hobbies. The hobby one is a bit difficult because I always say to people when they're close to retirement, I say to them, find a hobby. And I must say, with the retirement counseling, it never stops at the initial counseling. One of the guys, he started a hydroponic garden in his garden, and he's now 2-3 years into it, a wonderful new hobby. He still does a little bit of mentoring and independent counseling, but it took him 2 years to let go. He's also had major health challenges. Yeah, you can continue as long as you're healthy, but he had a stroke and a lot of health challenges, so he definitely had to scale down. But he's like a new person. He's more relaxed. He's a big technical expert, very cognitively inclined. And he started a new hobby with hydroponics, which is in the scientific field, but really getting a lot of joy from that. Then you can educate yourself further. Also with technology, with banking, I see that a lot about not being aware of the phishing attacks and just opening anything. There's so much to learn about just being in this world. For me, it's reading. Don't stop reading about your field, but also expand into other things. But not just reading books, but reading technical stuff or reading about new events in the world. So I think that especially if you want new discoveries, one of your values is continuous learning. Never stop doing that. There's so much available on learning about health, learning about finances, learning about playing on the stock market. If finance is your thing, then start playing the stock market and do that as your hobby, but it can also bring in money. And some of them start completely new careers and passions if they're adventurous. Somebody that retired from a government job, he was the most hospitable guy that I ever knew. When he retired, he started a guest house, and he loved cooking, made a huge success out of that, and still going strong. Some people say, I love entertaining. So start an Airbnb, build a flat onto your house, and start making passive income. A lot of retirees are into that. But there's so many possibilities, but don't stagnate. So they like that freedom and discovery of new things. Then the relaxers, oh, they prioritize. They're comfortable slowing down. They like their leisure time, family, hobbies, and relaxation. But they need to maintain some form of routine. You can't play golf all day. You can't just binge watch all the sport all day. You can't just lie around with anything. You need some routine and focus social interaction. Relaxation is good because you've worked all your life. So do some fun things. Go and sit on the stoop and watch the sea and the waves coming in and out if that's your thing. But if that's your joy, for example, the sea, why don't you explore getting a group to clean our beaches or to get involved in community? There's a lot happening in KZN at the moment. Get involved in those groups. Get involved in taking people swimming in the sea or fishing or whatever. Why don't you do and take people on fishing trips or teach children how to fish when they go on holiday? Oh, there's so many options. People just don't think about it because we're still in that mindset or mental model that I have to get up at 8 and work till 5. But if you're going to relax too much and there's inactivity and you become bored, that's dangerous for your health. Then we've got the searchers. The searchers struggle with transition because they don't know what they want. They don't know what they don't know. So they're very uncertain. They're restless. They don't know who they are. They've never taken our time to say, who am I really? I use the Enneagram a lot in coaching, and the Enneagram talks about how do you develop your consciousness? What are you not using? How do you go when you are stressed? How can you generate more options? What are the underlying things that has an impact on you, like suppressed anger or denial, or where do you go when you are triggered? And that helps them greatly to build inner resilience, to say, but I have other things available. And often they say, I wish I had this earlier in life. How do you communicate? Are you withdrawn? Are you reactive in your stress management or in your conflict? Because that could have a very severe impact on your partner. So when we become miserable in that stage, because it's too unstructured and I get bored, I normally project that frustration onto my life partner. And it has to be integrated into what we both want when we retire. It's not about your husband retire or your wife might retire before you. You need to talk about what would be meaningful to both of us. It's interesting to see how many relationships go south because we don't have those difficult discussions. So the searchers, they struggle with that, a lot of anxiety. I don't know what to do next. Tell me. I said, I can't do that. I can't tell you. I can help you think it through. I can help you with your anxiety. I can help you refocus or change your mental model. But you need a structured exploration into what you want to do, to try new activities. There's the park run. It's quite a nice community. You can offer to be to help sometimes there. You get to know new people. It's an hour of your week, so start small. Take the dogs for a walk, but walk a little bit further. Go on hikes. Join an art club. Join a wine club. Okay, if you're bored, don't try that. You might drink too much wine. but it happens. Find something that you thought, oh, well, this is brand new. Go for dancing lessons. Good movement and fun, and especially if you haven't been a dancer before. But find and read about things that you never had time for. Become an honorary ranger. I love the bush. Become an honorary ranger at the Kruger. They do amazing work in cleaning up stuff, in offering their services, in raising funds. There are so many things that will give you meaning, but you need to do active and structured exploration to get to that. And then you also, I just want to say, and that's important, Barry, you have personalities that are so structured in their thinking. They think this is all I can do. And they never thought of going from a provider to somebody that actually can do what I love. They don't know because they've never explored that. So it's a little bit of prompting and giving options of what's out there. Start doing a course in garden layout. And some people start a garden service, or some people offer their services to redo your whole garden. So from a hobby, there could be new opportunities. Big difference is you choose when you want to work. And sometimes what helps with the searches is things like obviously new activities, but volunteering, reconnecting from interests earlier in your life. Before life got so busy and you have to raise kids and you have to do whatever, what are those two things that you missed out in your life that you would like to reconnect with? So the continuous strong areas for them that comes out in terms of retirement is they still retain their identity and quite a strong purpose. The risk areas, and that I see all the time, they do nothing about their work-life balance. And you see that the health declines because they work sometimes even harder because they pull in all directions because they're now experts. And they have not thought of anything outside of the definition of what they are there for. The adventurers, they're quite cool because there's a lot of growth and engagement and excitement and they've got a lot of stuff, but you have to bring them back to reality. That's the people that avoid all pain. They have 10,000 options, but they don't look at, can my finances with all this adventures like travel and completely new careers, should I put my money in new businesses? Sure, strongly recommend get good advice when you want to do that, especially with your pension money. People get burned badly, just on that point. There's so many things that comes to my mind. But anyway, the relaxers, strong areas is relationships. So they're quite social, jovial and whatever, but their purpose and their health suffers the most. And in searchers, their strong area is that they're strong in exploration of options, but they explore so many options that they don't build that new identity that I'm talking about. Okay.
Oh, that was fascinating. I'm sure everyone who's listening like me is now wondering in which category they fit. quick note on what I do. I showcase health and wellness experts and creative individuals who inspire transformation to help them expand their visibility, build credibility, and connect with new clients. Featuring these professionals in podcast episodes and articles benefits my audience, who have access to helpful information and get to know experts who can support their growth. If you're a wellness expert keen to raise your profile, visit marietsneeman.co.za and explore the services section. I guide my podcast guests and article contributors through every step of the process. If it's your first time being interviewed, you're in the right place. Simply fill in the contact form on my website and we'll take it from there. Now, back to my guest.
I think before I look at what we, you know, what we need to do, I just want to talk about two things. There is the 80-year study. It's a longitudinal study that was done by Harvard, and it's a difficult book to read because it is a write-up of a study, but absolutely fascinating. And they look at the lives from people since they were born, so it's really worthwhile to read that. And it makes you question a lot of things about what you're doing currently. Even if you're not close to retirement, I think the sooner you read it, the better. And the other one I want to talk about is just the actual health issues that we see with that. What they did in the study is that look at their life stories of what they did with their careers, the children they had. It's really, really fascinating. But the one thing that came up that was absolutely astounding, that you don't expect, is that the strongest predictor of happiness in that book was not your money. It was not your fame. It was not your career, your job, your success, whether you got 10 badges. The most successful predictor for a meaningful, happy life was the quality of your connections, your relationships. People who had strong relationships with their family, with their friends, with the groups that they belong to, they lived longer, they have better mental health, they maintain stronger physical health, and they experience greater life satisfaction. So obviously, loneliness, absolute killer, to talk about what makes you sick, absolute killer. We are not, as human beings, we are not supposed to live alone and to not have any connection, and that you see a steep decline in health. So they say in that book that loneliness was shown to be more damaging to your health than smoking or alcoholism. That's how bad it is. So you have to invest intentionally in relationships and meaningful connection. It's very important. And at the moment, that's something that's quite challenging, because when you are working very hard and your time is very precious, it's the one thing that you let go of. And it has to be a concerted effort to say, I need to not disappear from my social connection. My female friendships are critical for me. My friendships that we have together as a couple with other couples, most of them are now post-retirement, because we are the babies in this dimension, but it made me learn a lot about how retirement is managed, and it's quite encouraging. It's like a mentoring in an informal way, but it's to make a concerted effort to keep up your connections, not only with your family values, but your grandchildren, your community, and you need to have that sort of critical close bonds, because that helps you to stay healthier longer. Now, there are some emotional, when I spoke about the different phases, some people get stuck and they just don't see the light, and they might not have enough personal insight to navigate through that. But the emotional warning signs that I see is persistent sadness. And I've spoken about that previously, about the sadness that what you envisioned, like your children sitting around a table, if that was one of your values and a very strong connection to your family. And now most of the people of our age have children overseas. So there's persistent sadness. Yes, so they've moved on, but you need to find new connections. Social connections are absolutely critical. Irritability. I've explained about the partner. Small things irritate me. And, you know, if we don't have something with a purpose that we focus on, I'm going to get irritated by the little things. And that is just because there's no structure. I'm actually unhappy with myself, but I project it onto everyone around me. And people will say, he's become such a grumpy old man. There's also a part of the personality that I want to say, looking at the Jungian side, is that when we get to old age, we have to integrate that shadow part or the part of us that we never looked at, to move towards becoming the best version of who we are, whether you call it self-actualization or individuation. And that's when true wisdom comes. But if I have been hard charged all my life, the first part of my life, don't take any nonsense, it's black and white, and you don't go and sort of release that in late adulthood, you are going to become more grumpy and controlling and not nice to be around. So there's also a link to how we developed and integrate our personality and the sides, the shadow side that we never looked at. And that really is a time of deep reflection. And I'm just a firm believer. You go so quickly through life and time just goes by very quickly. You get to the stage of deep reflection, not comfortable at all, not comfortable, because you look at that, your children is now adults. You are grandparents. Your friends have moved on. You've lost friends. You have made mistakes in your life, whether it was business mistakes, career mistakes, parenting mistakes. Please don't live with regret. Rephrase that as my wisdom of now I know better. And that makes me a good mentor. Go and do a coaching course if you want to help other people and let them pay for that. You've got lots of life experience. Nobody prohibits you from that. So that's also something that I strongly advise if helping is one of your values, and you can get an income for that. But when there's irritability, it tells me that below the surface, in the subconscious, there is misalignment. And it might be to integrate those parts that we don't live in regret. Because I always say, there's nothing we can do about the past. We learn from the past. We create wisdom from the past. We can become better at what we do. But if you live in regret, the sadness is more profound. Nothing you can change. The other thing, going into the future and creating all these terrible scenarios of, some people say, I would rather die than get this or get that. What have you done about that? If you're scared of dementia, because your mother's got dementia, what are you doing? Are you actively learning? Are you actively using your mind? Are you taking the right vitamins? Do you check your vitals? Don't focus on that, because what you focus on grows. Simple mind thing of how the mind works. What you focus on grows. Focus on your scarcity, and your scarcity overtakes you. Focus on your regrets, and the regrets makes you bitter. Focus on what can I do today, just today, just for today, that creates meaning, connection, purpose, and gives me joy, gives me a reason to get out of bed. But people don't do that. Then they become bitter and twisted. Withdrawal from social contact. Now, that could be a sign of pre-depression, or that I feel I'm so linked to who I was that there's shame or something else connected to that. Anxiety about the future, I spoke about it. We don't know what the future will look like. We don't know if we're still going to be 5 or 10 or 15 years single or without our partners, because they might fall away. Those are real scenarios, but what does it help? There's nothing I can do about tomorrow. If I lead a meaningful life today and do the same thing tomorrow and make peace with the things I regret and the self-punishment and becoming miserable, then the purpose comes and the meaning comes. And tomorrow I do something else again. And that way I build resilience to get and move out of this thing. But you also see excessive rumination about the past that I've just said, that people want to go back to when we were this, or I regret that. You can't turn back the clock. It's done. It's over. So some behavioral issues that we see is the use of more alcohol, loss of daily routine. They don't want to get up. They just sit and binge watch. Screen time, very bad for your mental health. And the decline starts. They don't exercise, things like that. Not good at all. And that takes me to the things that there are, the six domains that you need to ask yourself.
Is that the wheel? Is that the retirement wheel?
That's the retirement wheel, yes.
Okay.
The first one is identity. And how it was tied to your professional place and whatever. You need, retirement needs a reconstruction of your identity. You're not losing your identity. You are reconstructing a new identity. And you need to be asking the questions, who am I when I'm not working before you retire? Who's that person? Are you the sociable one, the people who get people together? You are the absolute gardening expert, plant expert. Who are you when you're not working? What are those parts that we neglect? What roles do I want to play in the next stage? You don't have to go full out and carry on working, people, because there's always this time frame thing of how much time do I have to really enjoy what I'm doing? Not that I'm saying you're not enjoying work. What aspects of your identity remains important to you? That I am a healthy person. I still want to exercise. I want to be a good grandfather. My fatherhood or my motherhood, those are identities that I definitely cling to. And that's around the value of family, but do it in a healthy way, as I said. So you could be a mentor, a volunteer, a community leader, a learner, a grandparent, a creative contributor. The second one is purpose. What gets you out of bed in the morning? Now, this is a very important question. Purpose is the strongest predictor of well-being and longevity. I need to share the story with you that really changed my life in changing my health habits as far as sleeping and understanding how the brain works. I did a CPD course with a neurosurgeon, and it was one of the most defining moments, and I heard it at the right time. Let me first say, he works in the field of psychoneuroimmunology. That is how your psychology and your neurological functioning in your brain and your body, how does that work on a very biomedical model? And then he looks at the immunity that you built by looking at those three fields. And he explained physiologically what happens in your body and also what happens in your brain. And he said, if you have no purpose, you don't have any meaning. So that's the strongest predictor of well-being and longevity. If you don't have purpose, you are going to die. And he also postulated that that's why men, if you look at the old age homes, who do you see there? Definitely not men. It's women. Women live longer because their purpose is far more diverse. I think it's one of the reasons. But men, when you don't have something and you don't have a purpose, you might die earlier. So you often experience boredom and depression. It's a massive loss to stop working. But you said, even if your purpose is to work in your garden today and propagate a new plant or a flower, it's not about money. It's about that you get out of bed in the morning and you go and play a game of golf, where you have a circle of friends and you're part of a community there, that you go on a walk where you have contact and have dinner with all the oldies. I call them the oldies. I shouldn't do. I'm also one of the oldies. But with your friends, where you have a early Christmas dinner. I mean, we've got a lot of standing things like that, which is wonderful. But if you do not have a purpose of today, I'm going to sort out my garage or do my hobby, you are going to die earlier. It also talks about, I'm not on the purpose, but this is important. It also talks about sleep deprivation. So what happened in the brain is that when you sleep and at least get quality sleep, enough deep sleep and enough REM and enough time to sleep, at least 7 hours, and not sit in front of the TV till 1 o'clock in the morning. What happens in the hippocampus where your memory is situated? There are important structures in the midbrain. It washes out all the toxic stuff in your brain and the bad connections of the neurons. So it keeps you mentally healthy. And that for me was a huge wake-up call because I would push it into the late hours of the night. And it made a tremendous difference to the way you function the next morning. So that's a talk all on its own, to look at how, you know, how your mental functioning is affected by bad habits. And then the most other important thing is how we eat and how you nurture your body with the right stuff. And what does wrong eating do towards the hormone, the brain axis? But it starts in your gut. You can't now go and eat fish and chips every night or takeaways or whatever, because a lot of the origin of hormones are in the gut. So if you eat badly, you drink too much, alcohol's got its own problems, or you smoke too much or whatever, it will catch up with you eventually. So that purpose is absolutely important. And the question you have to ask yourself is, where can I still contribute? In my community, in my family, in wherever. But you need to find a purpose. The third one is my relationships. Who do I share life with? And that's your built-in social contact. It's your daily conversations, even if you just go and have coffee with your other retired friend and you talk about the world and stimulating conversations. Your professional networks, don't lose them. Attend workshops that's relevant to you. Keep your mind intact if you want a mentor or whatever. And team belonging, where you belong to a team that might be cleaning beaches or the honorary rangers, or a team of coaches, or whatever you choose to do. Healthy retirement is very closely linked to intentional social connection. People are not going to come to you. You need to build this. And it's the key relationships things that you have to evaluate. Obviously, starts with your partner and spouse. Make sure you are on the same place when you talk about how our relationship is going to change. Your friendships are absolutely critical. They bring a lot of fun. You've been on journeys together. It's a deep connection. You don't have to see them every day. You build things around that. For example, for the last 15 years, we go once a year to a camp, but not camp, at least there are houses, so I really enjoy that. And for 4 nights, we divide the cooking, and it's a fabulous time to reconnect. And we have a vehicle to our disposal, so we go on game hunts. There are people that are excellent in birding. There are people that are excellent photographers. So you learn a lot about nature. And if you're a nature lover, of course, that is absolutely fantastic community to be in. There are birding clubs, just by the way. Family and grandchildren, key relationships, keep it up. Community groups, definitely your church, your community, and interest group. They are the largest predictor of happiness and health in later life because you are with your people. Your health, how do I sustain my body and mind? I've touched on that already, but it's definitely exercise. People, and walking is the best exercise, even if you just walk the dog, two things at one. Walk on the beach, wonderful, gives you quite a good exercise. Nutrition, absolutely critical. Eat high quality, good food instead of neglecting that. It's got a massive impact on your mental health because there's the gut-brain connection that's critical. Read about that. Enough sleep, sleep deprivation causes a lot of problems, and preventative care. Go and test your testosterone. Go for your blood pressure. Go for the men, your blood test for your prostate. That is taken off. They see prostate cancer as young as 45 now. It's shifted and it's caused by stress. Look at your preventative care. Take the vitamins that's necessary. Have a good medical history of what you're doing and prevent it before it happens. A cognitive health, definitely important. Keep on reading. Keep on learning. Do mental challenges. Learning new skills. Read, and read a lot. Just a small tip that I found very useful. I read incessantly, but I never have all the time to do that. So I make a practice of, in the morning, 10 to 15 minutes. I go onto LinkedIn I follow a lot of interest groups. So obviously my feed then, especially now with AI and leadership and mining and places where I work, what I do, I create a WhatsApp group and I invite my husband. Now I've got a group. And then what I do, if I find something interesting on Instagram or on LinkedIn or an article or a research article, I've got different groups on my phone. I've got Liz Strategy. I've got Liz Leadership. I've got Liz Recipes because I love cooking. I've got Polyvagal and Anxiety groups. So what I do, I just post it to myself. And what I do then, if I want to find something, I know it's there. But when I'm sitting at the doctor's rooms or I'm waiting for somebody in an appointment, I go through that and read. And so there's no excuse, people. And in mental challenges like playing Wordle or do something that you like word puzzles, there's a lot of those type of exercises that you can do that stimulates your brain and your thinking. And then emotional health, very important. Manage your stress and anxiety. And in the polyvagal work that we do, we work with the body. People tend to go on antidepressants and anti-anxiety. People, those are highly addictive, highly addictive. So there's a lot that we do to help you with that emotional health and regulation. Like, for example, meditation, journaling, write down your thoughts, work with your vagus nerve. And it's different things that we do, but things that you work with this wonderful body that you got before you go on to just getting a pill and you're still not solving the actual root cause. Please, and I just want to qualify, there is a place for medicine, but become acquainted with what you are taking. Ask the right questions. Don't be isolated for too long, that you're too much in your mind. And stay optimistic. People want to be around people that are optimistic and not always complaining about the country and the this and the that. My question is also, so what do you do to change it? And I always say, change it in the circle that you can control and it will spray out. And then, of course, financial security, things like being independent and not dependent on your children. That's for me, a very important one. I don't want them to look after me. Healthcare access, it's become exorbitantly expensive. Lifestyle choices, where I want to spend my money on, and reduce your stress by talking to a very good advisor. And it's also the psychological question is, do I have enough money? But what you should ask, do I feel secure and in control of my finances? And then the other one is your growth and engagement. Am I still evolving? Retirement should not mean that you psychologically stagnate. Learn, explore new interests, travel, study, develop hobbies, contribute skills, and keep on being curious. If you hear something, then go and read up about it. Mental agility and a sense of vitality is what you have to maintain. So what I suggest you do from those 6 points, write them down, then score them through a wheel with 6 components. You can put in more if you want to. The first one is identity. And then you score from 1 to 10. Have I defined the questions that I've just gone through? Am I sure who I am? Who am I if I'm not working? What do I need to work on in my identity? If you have not got a new identity, you might score 1 means I've got no clue. 10, well-defined in what I'm going to do. So you score it there. Then purpose. What gets me out of bed in the morning? What makes me feel alive? Relationships. Are you just living in the same house and become friends, but you're not partners anymore? How good is my relationship? Because that goes through tremendous changes after retirement. My health. Do I do my health checks? Am I exercising? Am I eating properly? Am I sleeping properly? What do I need to do? Or am I just like ignoring it because I want to ignore the pain? Financial security, a very important one. And then growth, how I keep my mental models in place. And then when you do that, then just from 0 to 10, color in those blocks and you will see the areas that you really have to focus on first. The ones, if you know financial security is 9, you don't have to give it any attention. But I also want to say a big but, you need to have a white file where you put in your will, all the papers that's needed if anything happens. there's an index that we normally have about that, because I see also when one partner passes away, they can't find the registration things for the car, they don't know where the will is, they've got none of the policies on hand. So be organized with financial security in retirement, but also when something happens to a partner. So those are the things that if you see you've got a low score like growth is 4, then you think, okay, so what can I do about it? If you have low identity clarity, then it's completely work-based, then you need to say, who am I after I retire? Lack of purpose, remember, that will lead to more the psychological factors that we see like boredom and depression, social isolation, poor health outcomes. Strongest research shows that if you are socially isolated, you get sick. Poor health habits, aging, and reduce independence because you become dependent on others. If independence is one of your values, make sure that you keep yourself fit and healthy. And if you don't have any growth or engagement, you get mentally old and you've got a higher risk of declining mental functioning. And then I strongly suggest that people start journaling. Journaling, especially if you're negative, just write down, start with writing down 10 things that you're grateful for and why are you grateful for them? Because I think we complain so easily, but if you can still walk, see, hear, work with technology, those are great things. Be grateful for that. And you can still drive independently. But also journaling about the emotions that comes up.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Lizan. And if a listener wants to contact you, perhaps they would like you to guide them in this process. Where can they find you?
I prefer that you contact me personally, because I'm not very good with, too busy to look at LinkedIn who wants to connect. But my email is very straightforward. It's lizane@mweb.co.za, or they can contact me at 082-877-267. I prefer that you WhatsApp me and refer to this, because I've got a very hectic diary at the moment and I need to know just context, because a lot of people contact me. So if you can do that, great, and then I'll be in contact and we can talk about what you need.
Thank you. So I'll also include these two, the email address and then your number. I'll include that in the podcast notes. And just for the listeners, remember that you refer to the Calm, Clear and Helpful episode, and then Lizan will know where that comes from.
Yes, perfect.
Lizan, before we wrap up, may I ask you a fun question?
Yes, you can.
Okay. We're going to the realm of the imagination.
Okay.
If you were a house where all your family members could get together for a wonderful weekend, where would you be found?
Oh, there's one very big favorite place that we do go when I manage to get all 4 children together, and that is in a golf estate not that I play golf, I just want to qualify that, in Dalstrom. Hills, beautiful hills, calmness, really very special for the whole family. And it's because we're close to nature, a lot of good childhood memories from my children, and fishing and all the other stuff that actually goes with that. That's number one. A lot of sentiment there. The second one will be our old beach house that we sold because the kids all went in the different directions. Very special memories around the table of when they grew up, and lots of fun and family time, definitely.
Thank you, Lizan. And yeah, for offering us your time and your experience. You have touched not only on pain points, which we should consider, but I do appreciate the fact that you really stressed the areas for further growth and gave us some stories and some practical tips to navigate those. So thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
To our listeners, I appreciate your joining us. It would be a great help to me and my platform if you'd subscribe to this podcast series and rate it. And if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9.